Welcome to the podcast where heavy industrial industries meet the venture capital ecosystem, interviewing both thought-leading investors and pioneering founders to better understand the opportunities and challenges that lie ahead for digital industrial innovation. Your host is Ty Finley, and this is the Heavy Hitters Podcast.
Have an amazing group of panelists here. Thank you all for joining in. What is the discussion today, which is defining the tech strategy, build versus buy. And we'll define that in some other options pretty quickly here. But I think we all know in this room, built world innovation's moving faster than ever. Digital transformation is at a record pace. So hence the age old technology strategy question, should you build it or should you buy it? Which we've got some panelists here to help us think through it. My name is Ty Finley. I'm a managing partner at Iron Spring Ventures, early stage venture fund, exclusively focused on the built world and broader digital industrial economy. So really excited to be here. Before I kick it over to the introduction of the panelists, I thought it would be nice to maybe put a little quantification to just how fast innovation is occurring, and maybe from a little bit of a capital markets perspective, because I know venture and a lot of this ecosystem here at Built World thought it may be interesting. So let's see here. PitchBook has the first data point. The Q2 Venture Monitor they published with the National Venture Capital Association said U.S. venture deal activity in the first half of 2021 is at about $150 billion deployed, around 8,400 deals. And to compare that, U.S. venture activity last year alone in total was $164 billion. So basically what they're saying is within the first half of this year alone, there's almost the same amount of dollars eclipsed within 6 months as opposed to the entire year last year. So tell me there's not more innovation dollars available than ever before. And then McKinsey research report, I'm guessing some of the folks in the audience have caught, the rise of the platform era, the next chapter in construction tech, outlined that from 2014 to 2019, investors put $25 billion into engineering and construction technology. And that was up from $8 billion the prior 5 years before that. So clearly, even within this sector, a lot more innovation dollars are getting put to work. So let's discuss all of this. And to do that, brought a great panelist group here, really from a broad range of perspectives, general contractor, software vendor, original equipment manufacturer, maybe even a venture capitalist up here. But really just to, let's have this discussion of should you build it or should you buy it? And I'll kick it over. Maybe Stacy, start us off. Quick introduction and perspective you're bringing.
Yeah, fair enough. Good morning, everyone. It is literally good to see everyone in person. This is my first in-person conference during the last exciting 2 years or so. So absolutely glad to be sharing a panel with you guys. So I'm Stacy Scapano, primarily just driving our moves and investments in and around offsite construction at J.E. Dunn. We're a national builder, if you don't know us, primarily around kind of the West Coast saddle down through the Sun Belt and a little bit up into the Midwest. My primary relevance here is around definitely that theme and then potentially some of the past roles that I've had. I've had kind of a drunken stupid walk in and out of the industry from starting out in the trades very early in life, very fortunate that some of the firms that I stumbled into were very early adopters in the 90s of some technologies that we're still talking about, modeling for fabrication, you know, collaboration. Back in the 90s, early 2000s, when I was doing that by accident, admittedly, I definitely felt that the industry was starting to get ahead of technology. I mean, we were just playing with Google for the first couple of years at that point. So my drunken stumble took me into tech for 15 years, and most notably, most recently drove strategy at Autodesk for building and construction. And that was a world with its hair on fire. When we walked in, the iPad was 6 months old. Cloud computing was kind of a running joke. We had 11 million users. And then 5 years later, you blinked and there was 400 million users globally at Autodesk. And I then felt that, hey, it looks like tech might be outpacing the industry. I'd like to get back into it. And so that's my ramble. And hopefully can kind of toggle back and forth on not only the build buy conversation and that experience, but definitely the different perspectives that might be relevant with the panel and the audience.
Thanks, Stacey. Oh, now you can hear me. So before I start, big shout out to Matt. This is incredible. It's so nice to see everybody in person. It's like lost friends catching up together. And it feels like the pandemic is hurting us a little bit less now. So big shout out to the BuildWorlds team, and thank you so much for organizing this. And after all that Stacy said, I'm like, I don't have so much to share. I've done very little compared to what he's done. I've done my share of stumbling. And now I actually am part of I lead the Hilti Trimble joint venture. So this joint venture is basically doing research and development and productization of new technologies around positioning, IoT, robotics and stuff. And some stuff around software, around integrations and development of new solutions for both Trimble and Hilti. So that's what I do now. And before that, I led the corporate venturing arm for Hilti, set it up, founded the North American arm, did that for a while. But done my fair share of stumbling as well. So I was a consultant. I was at McKinsey for 6.5 years working in automotive, metals and mining. So if you want to share stories about working in a mine, getting chased by elephants in Africa, so happy to share that over beers and coffee and stuff like that. So done my stints in corporate development and sales, marketing and so on. So had a very unconventional path, but finally have stumbled in a place where I feel very happy working with construction tech folk, and it's great to be on this panel. This such a high powered panel. I feel privileged to be part of this one. So thanks for setting this up.
Thanks, Devin. Meg Baldini, I lead corporate development for Procore, which spans M&A strategy and execution, as well as our newly launched venture arm, which we soft launched alongside the IPO earlier this year. My background, I'm a bit of an imposter in the construction world. I am working on a construction project myself right now. hoping we're on time, can't speak to the budget. I came up through consulting, finance, and tech, found my way into construction and was just shocked. I think, we had started dialing on how quickly you could get a pizza from 14th to 23rd Street. And meanwhile, I met Tui and the team back in 2015 and realized, holy crap, like you guys are, there's actual pen and paper being used around the table. And so it's been an absolutely fascinating journey. Perspective I'll be bringing is more around the buy side. very, very honored to be a part of this panel.
Hey guys. So Dave Burns with McCarthy Building Company. So we're a large national general contractor. We collaborate and spar with the likes of J.E. Dunn, DPR, others that we've been talking about today. So I've got 15 plus years focused in construction technology. Started my career, a little company called Oracle that was trying to get into the construction space. So it was front and center when we were actually building a lot of products specific to the construction industry. That kind of coupled with their ERP platform. So had that life for a little while and then stepped into the seat that I've been in for 14 or so years, which is really front and center in terms of considering either buy versus build decisions for a whole myriad of operational applications and problems that we face. So our team does enterprise scale type implementations, integration support, but we also, for a number of years now, have focused on this whole like experimentation, exploration, piloting. So definitely have this kind of new lens in which we're looking at like how these decisions are made because of how dynamic and all the opportunities that are out there. So happy to be a part of this.
Right on. Well, clearly world-class group here, a bunch of humility going on, but definitely reach out to them during the event. Some folks that are really making a big impact on the ecosystem. So Stacy, kick us off here. I think I've told you before, I think of you like a construction tech unicorn of sorts. You've lived tech incumbents, tech startups, you've lived on the GC side on multiple facets. So help us frame in this big lofty question of build versus up by any frameworks you've thought about in the past and really just how we should kick this discussion off if we could.
Sure, absolutely. I'll kick it off by saying my 5-year-old daughter would be totally stoked.
Run with it all day. Run with it.
He's a unicorn. I think this is almost like a Graham Nashian type question. It's just to balance all of the build by. Are you a vendor, investor, provider? Are you a firm? I really don't think, at least my IQ points can't stitch together this overarching framework. So, I mean, if you just kind of walk through the 2x2 grid for a minute, I think the build conversation, and I'm sure I'm going to get some shade tweets here shortly. I think the build conversation is probably the most similar, regardless of what side of the fence you're on, because it's almost tactically. It's really what development capabilities, horsepower do you actually have to play with? What are resources? What are the opportunities? And chances are you've got some existing solution stack that you're trying to advance and service. And I'm speaking in generalities because look at the number of stakeholders I'm trying to talk through. So the framework there almost can be kind of this, you know, bottom up perspective on how do we manage the spend, you know, and I can give you my age here by saying, you know, what's your roadmap, which is now more agile and responsive. I get it, but still directionally, what are you trying to solve and what are the adjacencies to what you have from a capability set and a solution set? I think when you get over to the firm, the provider side, the investor side, I think you definitely have a couple of different, and really quickly too, by the way, I'll put an asterisk over on the build side. As a vendor, looking at firms that homebrewed solutions, and somebody even mentioned kind of like, oh my God, everyone built a COVID tracing tool. One of the things I think the pandemic gives us a get out of jail free card for those types of mistakes. However, a lot of what I saw was a little bit short-sighted from a firm on a build side is just the maintenance phase and the modernization phase. It's not a lot of times I saw a build initiative brew up in a firm, and it was this huge heavy lift to get an innovation deployed inside their organization to, you know, 48 hours later, it began obsolescence really quickly and not a lot of planned intentionality around how you sustain it, advance it, evolve it. So that's my asterisk on the build side. On the buy side, and I'm sure Meg and Vivian definitely can add a lot more color and their perspectives here. So I'll just lightly touch on that. But in the provider space, to me, you know, how you deployed capital to complement those tactical capabilities of the team that you had, it is really an overarching framework. And it's really strategically, in my view, the best service that we could provide the organizations that are investing in our customers was really what's the most logical set of adjacent solutions that really gap filled your portfolio. And hopefully the 1+1 = 4 for both you and the customer. Were there solutions that you're adding that complemented and you're getting many more efficiencies both in anyone and tool as well as like subsequent workflow. So that's kind of how we've approached a lot of that, the investment space there on the vendor side. Finally, on the buy side, as a builder, specifically former design efforts as well, to me, that conversation's evolving so rapidly. There's going to be a lot of voices here for sure, but really quickly, I think in moving forward in 2021, making sure that the purchase and spend is really calibrated to organizational goals. So it's almost the inverse of that bottom up. It's more, I don't want to, you know, be dictatorial about a top down strategy, but making sure it's calibrated is super healthy for organizations to what the organization's either responding to the problem fix or opportunistically.
Love it. Great setup. Maybe I'll go, Meg, I'm going to go to you on the far end of the spectrum here. That the buy is clearly a big part of what you're focused on right now. Procore, venture-backed company, just rang the bell, listed to now Decacorn, I think if I saw the stock price correct. So well done. But how is the then and now of Procore's thoughts on this evolved? Love to see your side of it.
You know, I'll actually start with what hasn't changed, because I think we get a, you know, really exciting moment. We get a ton of press. Of course, there's, you know, a lot of teams in the background making the IPO happen, but we've been fundraising since we started, right? So really, I would say our strategy and our focus when it comes to M&A hasn't really moved significantly since our first acquisition of BIM Anywhere in 2018. Really, you know, looking at technologies that technologies that can advance, you know, close those gaps, as you just mentioned, for our customers, solving critical, you know, needs in the industry, our best in class solutions, especially as the ecosystem matures. We never had choice before. So that's a new one we're working through. You know, how do you compare, contrast teams, technologies, roadmaps? you know, really looking at companies that help us extend our reach through the project life cycle. Most importantly, I would say what I'm hoping never changes for us is, you know, anything that we look at from an M&A perspective, what is the path to integration? That's a binary. And then the cultural alignment with those teams is really important. But beyond that, I would say, I think the overall, you know, looking at M&A is really just a tool for Procore to, you know, accelerate our vision mission of connecting everyone on a global platform. And we see buy as a method to do that in a lot of cases. What has changed, we now have a lot more resources to take on more in corp dev. So it's certainly an exciting time for the company. I would say our appreciation for the skill sets, the deep expertise that you really need around the table to solve a lot of these complex challenges in the industry. When I first joined the company, I think a lot of folks said, we can build that. We can figure that out. I think over the last few years, and it's been an evolution of just you know, really building a deep respect that this is a complex industry, and heavy highway civil has different needs from infrastructure, has different needs from, you know, the residential multifamily projects, and making sure, you know, how do we bring that all together?
Awesome, Vivian. Before we jump, we'll come back to integration, Meg. It's a great point. We'll chat about that. Bring us home on this first launching question. Can't even keep up with it. Remind me, Concrete Sensors, Jibot, Exos, like very active on your side, but you've also brought up a great, I want to make sure I get the comment right, creating optionality, maybe when the tech development is still in a TBD phase of how it's going to run and what sometimes causes healthy friction versus internal and external development. So Vivian, walk us through more color on what you were explaining by that.
So maybe I add some context to that. So Hilti traditionally has been a build company. So we've been around for 80, 90 years, and we've always said, okay, we are fully integrated. Everything from R&D to sales and support is done in-house, right? So there's a very strong feeling of, okay, if it's not built here, a Salesforce can't really sell it. So for about 50, 60, 70 years, we were only focused on build. That's why I've spent $400, $500 million on R&D every year. We have university partnerships. So there's a very, very strong emphasis on building within the company. But what has happened in the last 10, 15 years is the landscape is changing. You have robotics, you have IoT, or you have construction software. We have moved into areas where we haven't had traditional expertise, right? Which means that we have to recognize that it can't be built in-house. So the ones that you spoke about, Jibot wasn't actually a buy, it was a hybrid. So we had a partnership with a startup called Nlink. We invested in them and we worked with them for about 4 or 5 years to build the product that you see in the market. So for us, building ownership within the organization is very, very important. So it's not a question of build or buy, it's about having the competence to make sure you bring the product to market and building the ownership to make sure this is successful. So there's two parts of it. It's not just product development, it's also internalization of the process. For example, similarly, the Concrete Sensors, it was an acquisition for the technology, but it's been customized over the last year and a half. So our sales force can say, okay, this is a product that we can go sell. So there are two or three things we think about when we say build or buy. One, do we have technological competence? If not, you start moving towards buy. Two, is this strategically important to us? Is that something we can develop over 5 years, right? So if we cannot do that, if it's something that's very fast moving, then you tend to go towards buy. Otherwise, you think about build. And finally, is it differentiated enough, right? If it's not differentiated enough, if it can easily be replicated, then you don't really need to buy stuff, right? So if all of these are yes, then we go towards buy, but it's still a very thought out process and it still needs customization. And it's a process and we are also learning. It's not something that we perfected yet, but we've gotten a lot better at it over the course of the years. And second point on optionality, right? Optionality is tricky because in the business unit, if you're developing something and someone else goes and invests in it, the business unit is super pissed. They're like, okay, what are you doing? Why are you doing this? So it's a mindset change that we are developing. Optionality is easier to create when it's different technologies. When you say, okay, I don't know which one succeeds, but I want to have bets in each one of these. And we're still working our way through that. So I wouldn't say we figured that out, but there's a realization where we're saying, okay, having some small bets just to make sure we see how it's evolving is something we're starting to do more of. And it will only increase in the coming years.
Awesome. And you hit on a word, we'll come to you now, Dave, partner. We said build versus buy the entire time we've promoted the panel, et cetera. And Dave, you brought up a really good comment during some of our planning, which is, well, there's another word out there called partner, right? It's like the between option. And Vivian, you mentioned it, you know, the facetious or cynic in me would say, isn't that just an elongated path to the buy option? So give us some more color what you meant by partner, because I think it was a really, really great comment to add into the fold here, because it is a part of the discussion for sure.
Yeah, for sure. So yeah, if you step back 5+ years and you talk about really any opportunity to implement technology in this industry, it was, you know, the options were limited and it was relatively straightforward if you're going the buy route, right? You put your requirements together, you engage the one or two players that are out there, you're yes, no across the board, and you're just, it's a standard like evaluation process to determine what's the best candidate, let's move forward and like work through the workarounds for all the things there they didn't check the box, right? And then obviously the build strategy, some of what Vivian said definitely applies in terms of the decisions around why you might pursue kind of more of a build approach if, for example, those two options that existed in the market just weren't the options, right? They're not going to work, right? And we need this. So you fast forward to now, and I think, yes, when we engage, you know, wherever this problem comes from, executive leadership says strategically we need to focus here, or we have this big problem, whatever that problem is, you're engaging in that, you're defining the need, and then you're turning around. And what's interesting today is, yeah, you're kind of immediately saying, okay, these are the two partners, three partners out there, players out there, vendors out there that we think have a clear play in this and a clear opportunity to service the need that we have, right? They've been doing it. Maybe they've been doing it for a couple of years. Or it's like, we know that no one exists and therefore we need to really consider a buy strategy. What I think we've started to position now is where we say, okay, we have these two players that we know exist. We have this build option that we're going to engage in this kind of agile manner, design out what this thing might work with, look like, whether it's in-house or external technology partners. But then there's the, let's pick our top three startups that we know what they're focused on, or we think that perhaps we can influence and align and engage and proceed in this direction where they're going to help us solve this problem, right? And that always doesn't work, but I think there's this desire on the tech community side to say, hey, we might think we know the problem, but like if you're telling us this is the problem and it's that close to what our strategic focus is, then let's actually work together and advance the ball in a more organic way where, yes, ultimately it's a buy strategy, but you are heavily engaged in that partnership, almost to the point where it could be an investment, right? Like you're putting skin in the game from an equity standpoint. That's kind of when the problem is there. And it's like, hey, build, buy, partner. What are those three strategies? How do they all play? Sometimes I'd also say that like, this is a little bit of a rear view reflection where you're like, okay, wow, like that development of that partnership happened super organically where that company kind of followed us along and we followed them along. So it isn't always this like moment in time and I get to think about this. It's almost like an after the fact, like, wow, yeah, the way that thing evolved was through a partnership as opposed to just this like buy strategy at the beginning.
Yeah, I'd love to yes and this because I think partnership obviously kind of drifts over to that supply side strategy really quickly as far as the technologies. But I also, I kind of, you know, super high powered panel, that's obviously a privilege. I also think about maybe smaller or medium firms where this is kind of like a privileged conversation. All I've got is a buy strategy. And I think partnering is actually an alternative mechanism that's just not instinctual at the smaller or medium-sized firms. And Meg, you could probably back me up here. I know at least my time at Autodesk, my time working with a number of startups, they're not just chasing big logos. Where an engaged feedback loop can be happening constantly, I think partnering is a fantastic option. If you see yourself as one, if you behave as one, yeah, if you engage as one. And so this is my flag waving small, medium firm. Hey, don't be a buyer. You don't want to treat your trades that way. You don't want to treat your consultants that way. You don't want to treat anybody that way anymore. It's 2021. We don't want to just buy. Don't buy yourself. I mean, and that's, I think even regardless of relative sizes here, you know, knowledge is knowledge. Inspiration is inspiration. And I think any of us will absorb it from anyone that wants to share it.
There's one thing I want to add to that. So we have a question of, are we a natural owner? When we think about build, buy versus partner, for example, augmented reality, right? We're looking at a solution that we want to deploy for a lot of people. But Hilti is not a company which has expertise in augmented reality, at least not today. So if we go and partner with someone there, we could have an enterprise agreement, we could have something else. We don't really need to build it, and we definitely don't need to buy it. So partnering is an essential part of everything that we do.
Absolutely. Hopefully the theme's coming out as we dug into this. It's not just as simple as the, you know, the old HBS case study build versus buy. It's nuanced, it's complicated. And Meg, I want to come on the partner side of this. With the Procore Marketplace, I think you now have over 300 partnerships. You have ran, my opinion, the tech playbook of being an open sandbox partner, being a good actor brilliantly. And sometimes you mentioned during our discussions leading up to the, sometimes that leads to yet another one of these squirrely paths of maybe putting an investment into your partner. Help us understand how the Procore Marketplace partnership lends and then how that sometimes feeds into investment.
Sure. Well, yeah, going back to build versus buy, I would say partner is the top of the pyramid, right? Because, you know, whether you're not going to, at least in my experience, you're not going to go and have an acquisition conversation with someone you don't know, certainly not in this ecosystem. We're way too tight. Our problems are too close knit, you know, where we're intersecting, really to solve a lot of the challenges for the industry. We are thrilled to add Invest now that we're a public company to kind of that toolkit. But when I think about Invest, it really is just almost like an extension of partnership. Really what you just said about skin in the game, meaning, you know, not only are we going to double down, you know, expose APIs, think through data transfer, you know, where is 1+1=5 for our joint customer, but we're going to put our money where our mouth is and say, we're also betting on you and your team. We're betting on this partnership. We're betting on the expertise that you've developed here. Yeah, really just, we see Invest more or less, you know, just as another tool in that toolkit. Gosh, I just have to go back to partner first. We've got Brian. I'm looking at Jeff here from the Procore team. I take my direction from them, from our marketplace team. Only other thing I'll add, when we do think about our Invest strategy, just because, you know, that this is a fairly new motion for Procore and in a lot of different ways that we could go about it, I would say our approach is somewhere between, if folks are familiar with sort of the Slack venture ecosystem, somewhere between a Slack Ventures and a SaaS venture ecosystem, somewhere between a Slack Ventures and a Workday Ventures. So we're not, this came up a few times on the panel yesterday. We're not looking to take lead positions. We're not looking to get on boards necessarily. This is an opportunity for Procore to really double down with fantastic teams doing awesome work earlier in their growth cycle.
Great. Well, so we've started, Stacey, thank you for the two blocker getting us to frame this big monster in. We've talked about partnership as an added variable. Meg, you brought up the comment earlier, though. Once you get through that whole digestion process, you got to implement and you got to have a roadmap for success post-transaction, whatever that is, a partnership, build, buy, whatever it may be. So the question open-ended for the panel here is, obviously organizations need talent in the playbook and processes to, in order, you know, post-close, again, to really capture all that value for both sides. How should folks be thinking about that? Any experiences, you know, across the table, you've all dealt with it. So I'm curious how you think about implementation after you've made the decision.
I can probably take a shot at that because we've done this multiple times in the last couple of years. So for us, the process starts very early. It's not post-acquisition, is actually much before that, because we need to start creating buy-in at a very early stage. So if you don't have buy-in from your business units and the organization in terms of roadmap, in terms of fit, in terms of resource commitment and stuff, before you start off, you've already failed.
Intent, so, the partner optionality terms we've mentioned over and over.
Exactly. So that's the first thing that you create. Okay, what does your roadmap look like? Where does this fit, right? And then once that's done, you have to figure out organizational dynamics, right? Who is going to be in charge of this? how are you committing resources to it? Then you have to look at infrastructure issues. How is the integration going to happen from an IT perspective, from a customer integration perspective, relationships perspective? So you have to start thinking about that. You have to think about tech stacks. Is the architecture suitable to the Hilti architecture, for example? And if it's not compatible, how long are you keeping it separate before you start integrating it, whether if you are integrating it eventually? So each of these is a roadmap that is created. And then there are teams, right? There's an M&A team which does finance. There's an IT team which looks after IT issues. There's a legal team. So you have a high power team, which is an integration team, which is put together. And this integration team then morphs into the leadership team, which will be running part of this. So there's at least a project manager who's going to be involved in the post-integration life of that startup. And since we are also a direct sales company, there's a lot of customization. If it's not Hilti red, it won't sell. So if it goes on the van, it has to be red. So a concrete sensor used to be yellow. Now it will be red when it comes out with Hilti, right? Then for us, the next stage is also working with markets. We are in 125 countries. So you have to say, where do I launch it first? Which continent first? How do I then start spreading it slowly? So all of these are not exactly in parallel. Some of them are sequential, but has to be thought through right from the beginning, during, and even during a post-launch as well.
Yeah, everything's 100% spot on, and all of my scar tissue is kind of inflamed at the moment as well. And one of the very strategic approach. One of the terms, Ty, when you've asked this question that I've heard just this last past year that has technically reframed every bit of challenge I've seen in the last past decade, personally, professionally, as an industry, is this phrase I heard on Bloomberg of all places on a totally different topic on absorptive capacity. Build, buy, partner, all great decisions, push button, go. That means things are changing in flight with people that are obviously doing something else already. And how are you being very deliberate about backing out? Did you add something and take something away? Did you add something and give something more? Are you putting a reporting layer on top of another reporting layer on top of somebody that was supposed to be building something to begin with? And I think it's, these are the right frameworks, but the question constantly top to bottom should be, what is the organization's capability to absorb this decision? And it's the power of saying no. You know, there's a lot of tropes out there, but my gosh, there's a lot of great ideas that died on the vine. What do I mean? Great plans survive until you get punched in the face kind of thing. And to tech is definitely, and the build buys that all of these dynamics, as soon as you put it in play, you'll see goofy people stuff. I didn't build it, so I don't want to do it. You didn't ask me about it. Like just stupid stuff. It'll totally throw a wrench in any machinery that you think you're building.
Right on. Any other takers? Dave?
I can just say, I mean, obviously a very different context when we're talking about it from our lens. So we're not buying companies, right? We're buying tools. And so I think, the word integration, you know, how you think about how that cooks into your organization for the long haul, how you support it. But I think you said it well, Meg. I think partnership, regardless of the buy, even in the build scenario, if you're using third parties, you're going to partner regardless of, in any scenario, right? But I think the part when you invest and you make a decision with a partner and you buy that solution, I think you have to have a strategy for how you're going to continuously engage with that partner. And build that relationship further. So in like the case of Procore, it's funny because Procore decisions around like partner versus buy are sometimes between Procore partners or Procore product teams. And you're having these real conversations with them where you could tell they're even teasing out like, do we want to like integrate this company down the road? What do you think of these guys? Or should we be building this thing in-house? And like, so those are rich, valuable conversations because you get a sense as to what that partner's strategy is for how they're going to think about build versus buy that informs your build versus buy. And so, I just say that long view that you take with any partner that you're engaged with, you have to have that. and you have to be proactive throughout that relationship.
Man, Stacey, you got me all, all worked up. Yeah, the only thing I'll add too is, I mean, we talk about playbooks. I think it's important to note that every single deal is a snowflake, whether it's a partnership, whether it's an acquisition, whether it's an investment approach to double down on a partnership. I mean, a lot of the same issues will come up. And so having the frameworks are so, so important around, okay, how do we bring teams in a cohesive way? How do we take founders from a company to put their last, you know, 5, 7, 10 years of their lives into something and make sure they have a voice at the table when they're part of a bigger organism? You know, how do we handle the go-to-market? How do we keep those sales reps excited? You know, not that we're like adding complexity, but, you know, we're making it easier to hit their number. So I'll just add just the importance of frameworks when we think about integration strategy. But that, you know, once you sign the press release and start working on the execution plan, it's, that's the real work.
Right on. Well, so I think to this point, we've done a good job really trying to broaden the scope of build versus buy discussion, partnerships, investments, optionality. But let's also say for sure, there's still a lot of build versus buy decisions happening right now. A lot of acquisitions in this ecosystem as we're watching it. So I'm going to bring us really back home to the decision of building versus buy, because sometimes it does get that direct. So we talked with the public market comps earlier, right? Frenetic investment price. We're seeing SaaS tech multiples just as one category, trading high teens now. So that all trickles down into some of these build versus buy decisions for some of the companies out there. And so I'm curious, how has the capital markets part of this whole equation affected those internal decisions around, well, they just raised X round with X valuation. There's no way that would ever pencil out and be accretive as I roll this thing up, let alone the implementation and all the other things we've talked about. So anyone want to take a swing here at how capital markets have affected this? Meg, I'm looking at you to start us off here.
Sure. It's definitely an interesting dynamic. I think when we look at valuations right now, and especially how that's changed over the past year, it's a supply and demand issue. On the one hand, there's a ton of capital coming into the economy, and folks are trying to find a place to put it. On the other, you've got a lot of, you know, more the generalist VCs finally waking up to this space and going, oh, I don't have any bets in construction, and this is a massive market. And so people are willing to pay up right now to play. It's certainly made things more difficult. I would say there's a third dynamic, which is the labor shortage has been an issue in construction since the 80s. I would say the technology space is finally starting to feel it. It's harder and harder to bring in great talent. And so on the one hand, things are getting expensive. On the other, the people make it worth it. And so there's always that careful balance, which is at certain numbers, no, you have to walk away. You have to wait for an alternative, maybe for the market to cool down a bit, you know, where the multiple doesn't, you know, can't validate a buy. At the end of the day, we all answer to someone. Ours just shifted from a board of directors to public shareholders. So if the numbers don't pencil, the numbers don't pencil. But I would say, when we think about the build versus buy partner equation, it's definitely had more room to stretch than I've realized.
Yeah, if I look back at what's different, which is code speak for that's the only way I can be a futurist is look backwards. You know, if the 2000s were kind of typified as kind of low grade octane for tech, you had a couple of incumbents, and then we kind of bumped up the octane when the landscape kind of broadened. To me, this is operating on jet fuel right now. This injection of capital has spun up this multiplier on an app for that type of mentality for all the problems and opportunities that we see in this complex space that we find ourselves in. Is it from an investor standpoint, are we flirting with irrational exuberance? Valid question. From the market perspective, we're adding layers of complexity on top of layers of complexity to just sift through to figure out what were you solving? And I think, what am I trying to say here? What's my point is I think we really just need to be very succinct, especially when we're inserting ourselves in a market that's trying to respond to some very kind of doomsday scenarios to throw a nice pessimistic tone into the morning. I mean, like half of the country is on fire. The other half's underwater this week. And so we've got some. Yeah, exactly. And yeah, are we all going home sick? I mean, it's amazing. But I mean, if you look at the demand, like the structural demand on our industry is only going to exacerbate. We're going to have more acute shortages of fundamental inputs. We have to have that solved. And so this is why I question the irrational exuberance pessimism. There is, I mean, it'll definitely need to norm itself out as kind of VCs rush in and then, you know, we kind of stabilize and that kind of first generational froth dies down a bit and something new and sustainable is going to be coming up in the next few years, I imagine.
And if I look at this, if you break it down for us, right, it's a math problem. Valuation is a math problem. The reason you buy is time and money, right? Time and effort, not money. So if it reaches a point where the cost of this is not as valuable as the time investment or effort investment you're putting in, you tend to do it on the build side, if you have the competence, right? In some cases, you don't have the competence. It just makes you think harder about the business cases. It just makes you think harder whether you should do it internally or go externally. At some point, the valuations are high enough that you say, okay, if I need to go into this space, then I'll build it on my own. It doesn't make sense to go out and buy at these valuations.
I think that's the most on-theme thing you said this morning.
I'll just say again, the different context is like, you know, when you're in a position of trying to make sense of the chaos, the investment piece of it is just like another data point for us. So we're like, you know, you obviously meet teams, you understand their people, their strategy, their focus, what problem they think they're trying to solve, who they're partnered with other than you. And then it's like, oh, you know, they might've received this investment and this valuation and you're, I think you see it so much that I would say it's a data point. It's like, oh, okay, well, that's interesting. But it's not like, oh, that clearly we need to go partner with them because their valuation has gone off the roof. But so the one thing I would say though, it's sometimes interesting to see who's investing. So we feel like there are a subset of venture partners focused in the space that when certain VCs invest in a company, you're like, okay, that is probably a company that we would want to better understand what they're doing if we don't already understand it. So it's just a data point for us.
Yeah, I think you made two really great points that I kind of think slightly differently about. The on the VCs, another partnering opportunity.
Yes.
Because in all that froth, as an operator, I look at risk. It's like, great. Great piece of tech. Thank you. Now let me go build a $1 billion piece of infrastructure with it and watch you disappear next month. So having a VC as a really good partner is a way to kind of de-risk that exercise. So that's one. The other conversation on the data point on this injection volume, Atul brought it up earlier, some of the stats from PitchBook. And then what this is, I think, accidentally doing that helps, I think, everyone in the room is it's raising the flag of technology as a strategic conversation for a lot of us, especially those in the AEC industry specifically. Easily 10 years ago, tech was propeller heads in the corner. We're builders, we're designers. Yeah. Somebody needs to push the light box. But I definitely think you're seeing a lot more war rooming at executive levels because of the sense of urgency of the capital that's validating, hey, we need to rethink this as just a shinier hammer and looking for some of these business model changes and shifts that really kind of help us respond.
I just want to use that to give a shout out to the sector focused funds here, Taiyu being one of them. And the value that the sector focused funds are bringing to startups is immense. So you see the difference between how a construction tech focus fund operates versus a generalist fund operates in construction. So the stupid valuations in some cases are driven by non-sector focused funds, which is unfortunate. Sure. And there I see Dave's point as well. So there's a lot of really good investors, and there's a good panel yesterday also where we saw some sector focused funds speak. But I think it's great that we have more of that in the space.
Appreciate it. The only thing I'd add here is really keeping a broad aperture of maybe it's not built world, but another sector because of some of the multiples and how the market's trading.
We're in fielding calls from the PayPals and the Stripes and the name your next, I'll use an analogy in the transportation logistics space, Coupa, well-known venture-backed company that went and got publicly listed, horizontal business spend management platform behind the scenes, enterprise IT software. They go by the most vertically focused warehouse management software company on the market called LlamaSoft for $1.3 billion. And what do you know? You have a new entrant into the transportation and logistics environment that they have their own way of looking at their accretion model. And when they see crazy multiple, but also what their platform could do to move into new adjacent categories like construction or transportation, just keeping that aperture open. I think that's back to the whole point of this partnership theme that we've hit on. The innovation wave is going, it's coming, it's here, and it's going to come from multiple sectors, forms, fashions, et cetera. So just keep an open mind, and certainly lots of panelists up here to reach out to, the network here at Built Worlds. Stacy, like you said, got to give a shout out to Built Worlds, everything they do to build the ecosystem, because we do need to be having these conversations right now.